Hello, everybody. This is George Frangoulis, your host of Maine Farmstead Radio. Living greener at home, on the farm, and in the great outdoors. You are listening to us on WBFY 100.9 FM, a radio show of Belfast Community Radio. Today, our show takes a road less traveled. Rather than talk about the science of country life, our guest tonight will talk about its art, music. Music by the Canterbury Country Dance Orchestra. However, before I introduce our guest, I want to tell you about an upcoming show by Ellen Sander. Ellen is a poet, and she has a show called Poetry Woodshed, which airs Tuesdays at 7 p.m. And next Tuesday, on May 23rd at 7 p.m., Ellen's show will feature Native American poetry. It's a special program. Ellen's out of town. Ellen has just released a book. It's a poetry memoir by Ellen. It's called Hawthorne, A House in Bolinas, and Bolinas is in California. It's a chapbook memoir by city poet Ellen Sanders, and it's been published by Finishing Line Press. The work, 30-some years in the making, is an unfolding narrative poem. In it, she celebrates a legendary West Marin poetic community of the 1970s, its neighbors and the luminaries who visited. Set in Bolinas, the beach, the eucalyptus, and the fog, the poetic portrait captures a legendary epoch in the fabled community. So if you're at home listening to the radio next Tuesday night, you can listen to Ellen's show, Poetry Woodshed, Native American Poetry. But if you want to get out and do something really fun and different next Tuesday night, our guest is going to tell you what he has in store for you. I think it's something you'd be interested in doing. Now, who is our show? Who is our guest on tonight's show? Well, before I tell you our guest's name, I want to tell you that he's a media icon here in Belfast. He's been a media icon for a number of years. And as a hint, he's not Ethan Andrews, our newspaper reporter. He's not Vic Treadwell, the radio guy here at WBFY. His medium is television, and his name is Ned Leitner of Belfast Community Television. And he's here tonight to talk about the Canterbury Country Dance Orchestra, which will be featured through a documentary film that Ned helped to produce, and it's going to be shown at the Colonial Theater next Tuesday night. So, Ned, why don't you tell us all about that?
Well, thanks, George. I'm thrilled to be here. This is the first time I've been on the radio here. You know, I used to do radio in college, and that was a great deal of fun. The reason you invited me here is because first of all, the Canterbury Country Dance Orchestra is not like an orchestra that you've probably heard a lot of times. It was pretty much founded by this fellow who revived the country dance music of New England, a fellow named Dudley Laufman. Dudley was singled out by a talent scout back in 1964 to play at the Newport Folk Festival. And he got together a bunch of fellow musicians, and it happened to be the same folk festival where Dylan went electric. You probably remember that was, well, maybe you don't remember, you're too young for that. But there was a certain shock that he went from being acoustic to being electric. But there were a lot of people there. And after he did one of his sets, the crowd kind of left and was going somewhere else. And they happened to go by this tent where these New Hampshire country dance musicians were playing, And, you know, a bunch of young people got turned on to this. And over the years, this country dance music, which I guess is called contra dance music, kind of became popular among, well, when I was in college back in 1972, it seemed like the hip thing to do. There was a classmate of mine named Greg Boardman, who, this was at Colby College, who was part of a local sort of old-timey music scene. And pretty soon all these college kids were going to what I always thought, you know, probably previously old farmers went to, you know. And so anyway, about 31 years ago, Dudley got a bunch of these, his musical friends, and they decided to put together a recording. And they went to this chapel in Middlesex School in Concord, Massachusetts, which happened to have fantastic acoustics. And there they recorded a record, a vinyl record, and it became kind of a thing. It became very popular, and a lot of country dance musicians, you know, got turned on to the music. And I think as the years went on, you know, people like my friend Greg Boardman helped start Maine Fiddle Camp, for instance. And, you know, around Belfast now, there's quite a group of musicians playing this country dance music. There's the Belfast Bay Fiddlers. I think they play right next door here on Sunday nights. Here, by here, I'm saying we're in the basement of Waterfall Arts. Sometimes when you do radio, you know, you're like somewhere in the air, but we're actually in the physical location, George, you and I. And so anyway, Dudley, who's now 85, decided he wanted to kind of have a reunion recording session. And he pulled together a bunch of musicians. He was actually the only one, when you say reunion, he was actually the only musician, I think, that made it back for this recording. There were a lot of his friends who didn't necessarily play on that album, and there were a lot of young musicians that were participating. I'm looking at the jacket to the DVD, and it, you know, there's quite a few gray-haired people, but there's also quite a few, you know, black and blonde-haired people. So it's, but it has this orchestral sound because there's 17 of them, and they're all really good musicians. And they hadn't actually even gotten together, you know, and rehearsed. So it's amazing it came out the way it did. And so my friend John Graffaire, who's a videographer who I worked with back in the 80s in New Hampshire, he's a wonderful documentary producer, but he also founded the New Hampshire Folk Festival. And so he's really tied into that. That country dance music. He even played accordion with Dudley on a number of gigs back. He didn't wasn't a professional musician a lot of the times, but he's a very good pianist. Accordion's a lot easier to haul around with you than a piano. So he, when he'd go to these dances, he would sit in on that. So he got wind of Dudley doing this recording session, and he called me up because John and I have worked on, oh, I don't know, at least a dozen documentaries together. Usually they're about communities and things, but we've done projects, I think, going all the way back to the New Hampshire Portsmouth Jazz Festival and things. And so what we did was we went down there. I guess it was probably when the date was in 2016. I remember it was sort of a brisk spring morning.
So that was just last year you're talking about.
Yes. Yeah. And we set up a bunch of cameras, and we sort of captured the recording session as it was happening. Now, obviously, a documentary that's just nothing but playing music might just as well be a recording. But of course, John is a really great storyteller, so in the course of the documentary, you learn about the musicians, about, you know, how Dudley happened to form the orchestra, about the music and things like that.
Okay, let me just ask you a question here. I mean, you're giving us a lot of information about this, and for our listeners, you weren't part of the orchestra. You were a documentary filmmaker. Is that right?
Right. I'm a videographer.
You're a videographer.
Kind of, yeah.
Okay. Okay. And your interest was, well, how did you happen to, well, you told us that your friend who was doing this invited you to be part of it. Is that right? To be part of the music documentary?
Right. Because it's when you're trying to capture an event like that, doing it with a single camera is kind of, doesn't do it justice. So I brought a couple cameras with me, and I had one that I operated. So
right.
I brought like three cameras.
Okay.
And we sort of had a plan of how we were going to cover the event.
Does this documentary look anything like The Last Waltz by Martin Scorsese?
Wow, that would be great. Not really.
Are you familiar with that?
Oh, yeah, well, you know, I know I'm getting to be an old fart when the shows that you see during Pledge Drive on PBS
right.
are the shows that you're interested in. When I was a kid, it would be like, you know, Lawrence Welk specials. Like, oh, good, I'm safe. You
okay.
know, I'm not an old fart yet. But I think this year they played The Last Waltz.
They did play The Last Waltz.
As part of a fundraising thing. But I'd seen it, you know, many years ago.
Yeah.
And I really dug it. I mean, and of course, you know, Martin Scorsese, he's got this incredible cinematic skill along with being a musical, you know, a person who loves the music. So, you know, that's probably the iconic music documentary.
I think so.
I could say, though, that in a way, it was influenced by Martin Scorsese because, you know, what would happen is there'd be some music and then Robbie Robertson would tell
right.
a tale of how he and the Jayhawks or whatever would tour and do things. So in a way, this documentary, there's a song and then we kind of interrupt it and talk a little bit about how, you know, a particular piece of music was created or how the music scene evolved in the 70s and things like that, so that you're hearing a lot of music, but then you're getting, you know, a sense of the behind the scenes of the music and the times. So in that way, I would say that there's some similarities. But
okay, now tell us again, where was this filmed?
This was filmed at this prep school chapel.
Okay.
In Middlesex School, which is a, you know, I'd never been there before, but it clearly was where a bunch of rich kids go to school. And I think Dudley, back 30 years ago, one of the members of this band was a music teacher there or something and said, hey, you should record in our chapel. The acoustics are just unbelievable. And the acoustics are just unbelievable. You know, I think, I don't know what it is you want, but you want like a certain amount of natural reverb. You know how people like to sing in the showers, especially in like a gym shower where there's a certain amount of echo. And when I was in college, there was a group that called themselves the Stairwell String Band because they liked to play in a stairwell in their dorm because it had just the right amount of echo. So this particular, you know, chapel had really just the right amount of natural uh-huh. reverb. And yeah, and it just, you know, whatever it is that was the magic that created the sound. We can listen to, I know, you know, your engineer has been feverishly putting some stuff together. Is there anything we can play, Doug? Doug's off mic, so he'll have to do it with
Doug
sign
Bacon
language.
Doug Bacon has been preparing.
Let's see what he's going to play for us. I came here, George asked me to bring some files, and I just brought the whole file. Let's see, it's looking for something. And it's gathering, and it's nearing something. Boy, you should see all the dials and you know, it's like we're flying a jet airplane here at WBFY, all the dials and things that have to be working here. And
you know, going back to what you mentioned earlier about the Newport Folk Festival and Dylan going electric.
Yeah.
Well, I remember that very well, because Pete Seeger was on stage listening, and later he said, you know, I wished I'd had an axe. I would have chopped that microphone cable.
You know, Pete Seeger's an interesting cat because on many ways he's so open-minded. Like he doesn't believe, or he didn't believe, I guess, may he rest in peace.
He's passed away.
Yeah. By the way, I ran into Pete Seeger at a music festival, he and his wife, and they were just sitting down having a picnic, and I'm going, huh, I don't want to like interrupt this moment, but I'm like right next to Pete Seeger. You know, he was about 85 years old. He wasn't like he was, you know, when he was, you know.
I ran into Pete Seeger years and years ago myself on Cape Cod. I think it was Hyannisport. And I was with my first wife, and he was a young chap then. I mean, he was probably in his 40s. And he invited us to come into the bar and have a drink with him, which we did. And then he proceeded to hit on my wife. You know, he was quite the ladies' man.
Yeah, yeah, I could see that about him. What I was going to say about him is being open-minded. He doesn't believe in copywriting music, you know, so... I have a friend, Dave Mallett, a kid.
Heard of him.
Yeah. He, and of course, he wanted to record Dave's song. There's a song called The Garden Song. I don't know if you're familiar with
well.
Inch by Inch, Row by Row. Yep. Must be almost a theme song for a Maine farmer's.
Well, absolutely. It has to be.
Yeah.
And I think Noel Paul Stukey did a version of that, too.
Yeah, well, when Dave Mallett was, you know, a college kid or hanging around University of Maine when I was there, and I had a band, and we had turned our living room into a recording studio, and Dave was trying to, you know, get noticed. He hadn't recorded anything. We kind of recorded his demo recording. And I was the one that said, hey, you know, Noel Paul Stukey has started this recording studio called New World Records. You should send it to him. And Dave was actually sort of reluctant to do it, but then he did it. And, you know, so I'm basically the reason he's famous. No, I'm just kidding. But
is that when Stukey was in Blue Hill Falls?
Yeah, yeah. At Blue Hill Falls in what was called the Hen House back then.
Yes, it
then.
Was. Yeah, I was living in Blue Hill at the same time he moved to town.
You know, I recorded a record in the Hen House, not with Noel Paul Stukey, but with his engineer and our band. It was a novelty band, right? I mean, pretty wacky music. And I just remember Noel Paul Stukey walking. You know how in recording studios there's like a big window where people can like look in at
right.
the music? He like walks in to the studio, looks, stands there, listens for a while, shakes his head and walked away. That was a vote of lack of confidence. And, you know, I must say that it was not a million-dollar seller, our record. But it did have a novelty
well, you know, you're,
fame
you're,
for a
you're
while.
Looking like $1 million right now. I'd love to describe what Ned is wearing in the studio. From the waist up, he looks like $1 million he's got on this.
It's amazing what you can get at thrift stores these days.
Bright orange. Doug, have we got that music ready to go? We're going to try to...
Well, let's try this one that said good beginning at 2:05. That might be good. We'll do whatever it says. Oh, you can go with anyone. Let's try that one. See what happens.
The Canterbury Country Dance Orchestra made its first recording in 1972. Jack Sloniker produced the LP for his Farm and Wilderness record label and recorded it here in the chapel at Middlesex School in Concord, Massachusetts.
Huh, it goes on longer than that. We didn't get much of a taste. But that's... Well, can we go on to the next piece?
Oh, here we go.
Here we are.
Thank you. Why did you want to do this? And what do you want, how do you want this to come out today? What do you want this to be?
You know, we all kind of think that we live forever and that this music's going to go on forever. And it only goes on forever if we also keep taking part. And, you know, Carpe Diem sees the day. And this music is so beautiful. It still stirs my soul when I listen to it. And I know it does for some of you. And so I thought, you know, there's a moment left here to capture this music, and I want to do it. And I asked him, Dudley, October 19th, 5 months ago now, and look at us here. So I thank you all for this great opportunity.
And thank you.
That was an excerpt from the film about the Canterbury Country Dance Orchestra, the film that's going to be shown Tuesday evening at the Colonial Theater.
Right, and that you were just hearing Jacqueline Loughman, the wife of Dudley Loughman, when she was saying, you know, we have this last opportunity to kind of capture this moment. Like I said, Dudley was like 85, and he's not getting any younger, so this may be his, you know, last great recording. Jacqueline, by the way, is going to be coming up to the show along with my friend John Graffaire, who was the editor and producer of this documentary. I always say that in a documentary, you know, most of the storytelling is done by that editor. So John deserves most of the credit for this. I was just having fun being part of it. But I'm grasping onto that, you know, slight connection to kind of bring
the immortality
to bring it to Belfast for its main premiere. It's actually going to be shown on Maine Public Television about a month later, but we thought we could make it into a cool event. You know, Chrissy Fowler of the Flying Shoes Country Dance program here in Belfast, I got in touch with her and I said, you know, Chrissy, what do you think of this? Do you think we can like do something more than just show the documentary? It's only about an hour long. And she said, Ned, you know, after she looked at it, this would be, you know, perfect to kind of create an event around. And so she really deserves a lot of credit for pulling together this bigger thing than just showing the documentary.
So what is the schedule that's happening?
So what's happening is, well, Chrissy, with all her connections, is inviting as many of the musicians in the area and actually in the state of Maine, and as I mentioned, even Jacqueline Loughman, who was on the recording here, to come up and sort of play for a while. It's going to be this great, you know, the wonderful thing about this music is that musicians have sort of like a large common repertoire, and they come together and they play together, and it's this wonderful community of playing that is sort of the heart and soul of this country dance orchestra, because basically that's what these musicians were doing. They were, you know, bringing some of their traditional tunes and coming together and playing it. And so Chrissy is having, when you walk into the theater, and it's, by the way, it's by donation if you want to come in.
And by the way, it's on Tuesday, next Tuesday.
Tuesday the 23rd. Of May. Yeah. So I don't know. We're doing it live right now, but I think you're going to play it a couple times. So, you know.
This show will also air on Sunday afternoon.
Oh, okay. So anyway, if you come around 7 o'clock, for the first hour, it's going to be live music and playing. And Chrissy, who is also a wonderful contradance caller and instructor, will be kind of leading a little bit of a discussion about, you know, what this music means to people and the whole idea of creating music together in living rooms or basements of waterfall arts or places like that. And then, you know, it's, well, we called it a gathering of Mid-Coast musical tribes, because there are all these kind of pickup ensembles, you know, whether it's at the Flying Shoes, they have the all comers band, and that my son, who's 14, and some of his classmates at Ashwood. Ashwood is a Waldorf school where all the kids have to learn to play the fiddle, and so he's played in this orchestra. And there's I think Chrissy's son, who's 7, has been playing the ukulele in it since he was 4. And then there were the professional musicians that last May 5th, I think I was there when I did the interview with Chrissy for the television show. And they had these wonderful musicians from Canada come down, and they played in the all-comers orchestra. So, you know, that's that community orchestra that plays for the community dance from 6 to 6:30. And if you go to almost any major event in the Belfast area, whether it's Harbor Fest or Arts in the Park, you're likely to run across the Belfast Bay Fiddlers, which is another group, large mm-hmm. group of fiddlers. And more than just fiddlers, I remember someone playing I think it's the all-comers band where they play all sorts of other instruments, including tubas and things like that, but still this country repertoire. So all these groups, the Gawler sisters, who are, you know, wonderful professional musicians, they have family and friends that have another sort of pickup group. So all these people are coming together, or, you know, groups of them. I don't know who can make it all on a Tuesday night, but Chrissy's organized that to have sort of a musical jam session. So we'll do that for a while, and then we'll watch the documentary, and maybe there'll be some follow-up conversation at the Colonial. I just want to thank Mike Hurley and Therese Bugnardi for helping make this happen and to be so open to, you know, letting us have this event and encouraging us to, you know, have musicians play. And we're going to be in Dreamland, which is, you know, the old vaudeville stage and stuff. So it's really going to be a pretty nice setting for such an event on, Tuesday.
It sounds wonderful, Ned. I'm going to take a little break here. Then I want to get back and hear about some of the nuts and bolts and what were the challenges you faced when you were making this documentary, because I think that would be interesting, a little behind the scenes.